National. I have in front of me one of my favorite newspaper. We've had the chairman and CEO of Investors Daily on a couple times. Looking at his paper, we saw yesterday 383 new highs, 30 new lows. There's not a sector, basically, that has more than a couple of new lows in it. That's a sign of internal strength of the market. In fact, yesterday we had over 900 new highs. We have this against the backdrop of $60 oil, unsettling news that comes in every day from Iraq. We have all kinds of media wanting to tell us that nobody's working and all the trucks are empty and we're in the middle of all kinds of problems. Unfortunately, that happens to be the media's way of being. What I've talked about in here is operating under an unemotional platform of simply using the magnet stock selection process. Identify companies, sectors, and industries that have powerful revenue growth, margin growth. And, folks, if you want an updated list, we've been running pretty strong. We don't want to put our foot in our mouth. If anyone would like a complimentary copy or list of what ranks at highest on Magnet right now, give us a call at 888-766-6828 to look at the list of what ranks out the highest, or come to us on magnetinvesting.com. Contact us. See if we can help you get away from the media and get back to profitable investing. One of the persons that is going to try to help us now get even more profitable, do we have Simone Myers out there?
Yes. Hi, Jordan. I keep getting cut off. So
hey, Simone,
thank you
how are you?
For inviting me to your show.
All right. Well, listen, we're happy to have you on. Simone is the director of the Center of Unified Research and Education. And Simone wants to talk about social investing. And I actually was on Simone's show recently, and I challenged Simone to come on here. Hello? Simone? Sounds like we lost. So anyway, I think we lost Simone. What Simone's interested in, and she's invested in a concept called social investing, where they're actually looking to find companies that meet certain social rankings. So therefore, companies that maybe that invest in or produce tobacco or firearms, or in fact, my favorite sector of all, the gaming sector, would really not reach Simone's screening. So she was going to come on and help us to try to see. I challenged her to find some sort of quantitative method to see if she could help us with the screening. Now, unfortunately, it seems like she got cut off. So what I want to do is let's go back, in fact, to really what we've been talking about and what the authors that we've had on and some of the top investors we had on is a way of actually controlling your emotions and not allowing yourself to get caught up in the hysteria of the media. If I was to read what was going on and I was to find out, according to at least what I'm reading, I would guess right now we are in the middle of the biggest unemployment in this country's history, that the Dow Jones average is hitting 5-year or 10-year lows. Folks, interestingly, we are only a few hundred points away or several percent, a few percent away from an all-time high on the Dow Jones. So, while I have some time here without a guest, let me talk about something else that's very, very important to me and something that I saw some more evidence on actually in yesterday's data. We're hearing of the travesty of the outsourcing of employment in this country and how this is really deeply affecting everything around us. Well, some statistics came out and showed that the highest paying jobs or the sectors that showed the highest job growth in our country were the highest paying jobs in the country. And the job industries such as textile and low-end manufacturing, these were the lowest paying jobs of all. So what's real interesting, you're hearing about the problems in outsourcing, it's actually not correct. One of the things I like to talk about is years ago, some of these factory jobs, which we luckily are able to find lower-cost producers to free up our workers to innovate and move into new industries, these were actually the jobs that people really didn't want. They had hazards to them. They were physically demanding. They didn't require a lot of education. And the interesting thing when you look at the world job market right now, what's not discussed by the media who wants to paint the wrong picture, frankly, is the number of jobs that have come into the United States from foreign companies. In fact, in our recent headline from this morning, I live in North Central New Jersey, one of the large pharmaceutical companies, Novartis, announced a $115 million construction project to expand their presence locally to me and hire 950 new workers. So that's the kind of news that we really do like to see, and the fact that, you know, frankly, that doesn't get enough attention. So, folks, I actually think our economy is stronger than the media likes to say, stronger than the people who are the naysayers. So in the very few minutes we have left on the segment, I heard we got Simone's phone working again. Simone, are you out there? All righty. Well, Simone is going to have to join us another day and another time. And she's an interesting woman, but somehow we can't connect with her. So we thank her for trying to come on the show, and we hope that she doesn't mind the fact that we actually isolated the gaming industry several quarters ago. And here's how we did it. What we looked at is we like to take a bottoms-up point of view and say, which industries are showing the most companies ranking up high on Magnet and why? When we can find a whole group that's doing well, there's got to be some sort of thing underneath it. So while a social investor would say we actually don't want to invest in the gaming industry because we don't like the industry, we probably would have missed out on some of the nice gains we've generated for people. Incidentally, not that I'm against social investing. I think it's an interesting concept. The number one single top returner in all of the S&P over the last 40 years or 50 years is actually Philip Morris or the MO or Altria. And I thought it was going to be a nice, interesting discussion with Simone. I actually, myself, don't do social investing. I like to make as much money as we possibly can and then donate the profits, or some of them anyway, to charities that we think are the most important. So while I would never invest in a company that I think is actually polluting or causing harm or intentionally not running good businesses, I've yet to figure out a way to quantitatively bring social screening into my process. We thought maybe we'd bring her on and see if she could help us. What I want to tell you, folks, is we have two of the most interesting guests coming up on some of the great topics that most interested me. So please stick with us. You are listening to Voice America Business. I am Jordan Kimmel. We'll be right back with more profitable investing after this quick break.
Technology is changing the way we live our lives and how we do business. On Managing Technology the Right Way, we'll talk about the benefits of technology and the great things it allows us to do, as well as its associated risks. Heard every Friday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, Sun Jogal, the host of Managing Technology the Right Way, will interview business leaders and other experts that have shaped the way we use technology. If you want to keep up with the changing world of technology, listen to Managing Technology the Right Way with Sunjo Gall every Friday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Achieve total wealth management. Listen to Three-Dimensional Wealth with Roy Diefendorf every Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 Eastern on Business America Radio. Three-Dimensional Wealth is a show dedicated to teaching you a values-based approach to comprehensive total wealth management through practical strategies and expert advice. Take your first step down the road of financial independence. Listen to Three-Dimensional Wealth with Roy Diefendorf, Mondays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 Eastern, here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
What stock should I buy?
When is it time to sell?
Where do I turn for honest advice on my portfolio?
For the answers to these questions, tune in to Trading in Today's Markets with Oliver Alvarez and Greg Capra every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time. On the show, Oliver, Greg, and their guests will discuss the daily going-ons of Wall Street, as well as give you tips on how to identify the hottest sectors and trends in the market. Improve your portfolio. Listen to Trading in Today's Markets with Oliver Alvarez and Greg Capra. Broadcast live on Business America Radio every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time.
Win with effective marketing. Win with proper positioning and branding. Win with Dick McDonald on his show Win-Win Marketing for Buyers and Sellers every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time. On the show, we will discuss the challenges and common mistakes made in today's industry while providing you insight on what you can do to avoid these pitfalls. Get ahead with effective marketing in today's world. Listen to Win-Win Marketing for Sellers and Buyers with Dick McDonald. Heard every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time here on the Bottom Line of Business, BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Tune in to Big Money with Mike Gaisher every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Mike will focus on the issues, needs, and problems affecting the world's largest investors. Join Mike and his guest from the institution investors industry as they discuss investing and controlling your money. Mike has spent his entire adult life in close proximity with the financial markets and has become one of the world's most sought-after teacher and speaker on topics of the securities, markets, and the economy. Author of 8 books on the security markets and a monthly newsletter read by over 250,000 people, Mike brings insights, humor, and clarity to this often secretive community. So tune in every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time for Big Money with Mike Gaisher on business.voiceamerica.com.
Voice America Business would like to thank you for logging on and tuning into The Growth Strategist. Join us each Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time for another exciting episode of The Growth Strategist, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
Keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business, this is Voice America Business.
You're logged on to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. If you would like to call in with a question or comment for Jordan or his guests, dial toll-free at 1-888-766-6828. Once again, that number is 1-888-766-6828. Let's get back to another segment of Profitable Investing. Here's Jordan Kimmel.
And welcome back, everybody, to another segment of Profitable Investing with me, your host, Jordan Kimmel. It's my pleasure to bring on John Maldon right now, both a friend and a best-selling author. John, welcome to the show.
Good to be here.
Glad to have you with us. We'll get into John's best-selling book, frankly, that was on the New York Times best-selling list later. But really interesting, John has a new book coming out called Just One Thing. John's the president of Millennium Wave Investing, and what he's done in this book is I think he's interviewed some of the best investment minds and some of the people he's most interested in, and asked them to share with them, the one thing that they'd love to share and they've learned over their many years. So let me just jump right into it, John, if you would. Maybe you could share a couple of the people that appear, the investors that appear in your book.
Well, we've got some that are very well known. People, I think, would know Richard Russell, Bill Bonner, Dennis Gartman, Mark Finn, Eddie Sterling, Andy Kessler, and a half dozen others. There's just 12 of us.
Okay. Okay.
And basically, rather than me interviewing them, each of us have written our own chapter. So it's.
And you told them just to share the most important thing, huh?
The one thing that they've learned that they wanted to share to pass on to other people. And what you find fascinating is that it's a really wide variety of information. I mean, George Gilder talks about the importance of insider information, which is not something that, you know, you'd think that Gilder would write about. You'd think he was going to be writing about free markets or he'd come up with something on technology. But he says, no, what you've really got to understand is how information is processed. That's the critical factor.
Okay.
Andy Kessler ran $100 million in a hedge fund into $1 billion and then stopped at the top of the market and sold.
Mm-hmm.
And he writes about the importance of sometimes not knowing what you're doing from day to day and not having a plan. What he points out is if you know everything going forward, if you know everything, then everybody else knows it too.
And, interesting. Okay.
So that there's no value in it. So you actually have to look for pockets and places where the rest of the world hasn't figured it out.
Wow. And continue to adapt.
And it's a constant process of adaptation as you go through. He calls it. He's got a great story. He went to Mount Washington in Vermont, which
okay.
is known for its really bad weather.
And okay.
they started up in a sunny day, and all of a sudden, fog hit them. Really dense, thick fog.
Okay.
And there were markers along the trail about every 10 to 15 feet. It was a yellow marker. And all they could do was go from one yellow marker to the next. They'd walk because it was a switchback. They were actually climbing the mountain.
Gotcha.
And so he says investing is like that. You go from one marker to the next. You really can't see the top of the mountain until you get there. And then when they got to the top of the mountain, of course, the weather cleared off, and they had this perfect view, and they felt, you know, like heroes. You know, they made it
sure.
through this big experience. But sometimes when you're trying to make the really big score, if you're doing what everybody else is doing, you're going to get market returns because that's what you get. And if the returns are good, then that's fine. If the returns are flat or bad, like they've been in the last 5 years,
mm-hmm.
Then that's not so good. But if you're looking outside the box, and then you have the potential for to do what he did, which was, you know, run his money up 10 times in 5 years.
Right. Hey, I absolutely love that story. How it transfers into the investment business is perfect. I think that's really just tremendous. Give me, give us another story or another anecdote, maybe one other. I know we don't want to spoil it. We're going to recommend everyone buys this book. Give us one more guy and maybe what or she, what they had to say.
Well, I'll give you what I'm, my chapter is.
Oh, great. Thank you.
I'm calling it the Millennium Wave.
Okay.
And my thesis is that we're getting ready. You remember, there was the first and third, a book by Alvin Toffler back in the 70s called The
Future
Third Wave.
Shock.
Future Shock. And then the third wave. And he postulated that we were in the third wave of human process.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the information age. Well, I think that we're getting ready to see something unprecedented in human history, in that we're going to see an innovation cycle. Normally you get, railroads, and then you get electricity, and it permeates through society. We get kind of one major innovation and shock after another. I think we're going to see something different, in that we're going to see multiple innovation cycles all hit in roughly the same period of time. It'd be like having Ford and Edison and Bell and, Eli Whitney and Watts
wow.
and Newton, all at the same time, all inventing something, all that's going to change the very character and nature of human commerce and civilization. We're going to see what happens in an innovation cycle. You get the growth stage, and then you get the first boom, then you get the shakeout.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't really seen a shakeout from the communication information world yet. That's getting ready to happen. I mean, we don't know who's going to be your cellular, wireless, cable, broadband.
Great point.
That's all got to shake out. And then you see, after that shakeout happens, you see the mature boom, which is just as big as the first wave.
Mm-hmm.
But in addition to that, we're going to see a boom that's just getting ready to kick off here in the next 2 or 3 years from biotech. And the revolution from the biotechnology is going to be crazy.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to on the tail of that, and we're 10 or 15 years out, coming in on that, we're going to see the quantum boom, as we call it, from nanotechnology.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a bit of really small machines. And that's
right.
Going to fundamentally alter the character of manufacturing. And I think we're going to see an additional wave in terms of new energy sources that's going to just revolutionize how we access and use energy.
Wow.
On top of that, we see the globalization process, which
mm-hmm.
is fundamentally different than anything we've seen. And we're watching society itself change in the way that we're organizing ourselves as humans and governments. It's going to be an exhilarating ride. It's going to be unsettling. A lot of people don't like anything to change.
Mm-hmm.
And as human beings, we're going to have to learn to adapt and change faster and to be more flexible than any time in the history of the world. I mean, you understand, change is accelerating.
Absolutely.
We're going to see as much change in the next 20 years as the entire last century. It's like compacting a whole century's worth of change. I mean, when my dad in the mid-1920s, they hitched mm-hmm. the wagon up to take it into downtown Fort Worth. And then they 67, we put a man on the moon, and now we've got the Internet. Well, we're going to see all of that compacted into the next 20 years. And then, in the next 14 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's how fast it's happening.
Right.
And then in the 7 years after that, we're going to see it double again.
Wow.
So we're literally going to see 2 centuries worth of, in terms of the 1900s, 2 centuries worth of change happen in the next 21 years.
Hey, John, let me tell you something. I got to share with you that I actually, I think it's a fantastic, fantastic concept you're bringing out. It's happening as people write white papers and get to share them on the Internet, and then they take that to the next level. And I absolutely, completely agree with what you're saying. Let me just, touch one base because we only have a couple minutes left. I want them to know where they could possibly contact you for information, maybe at the website.
They can go to johnmaldin.com, M-A-U-L-D-I-N, johnmaldin.com. And they've got my, free letter that I write every week.
Okay.
Accredited investor. They can find out about our hedge fund services.
Right.
This
is fantastic. Now, let me just ask you, briefly, I remember the last thing, I read by you in terms, the last book, was not very bullish on the markets themselves. With all the innovation you see coming, do you see a more bullish time ahead?
I think that after the next recession, and mm-hmm. maybe to when we get back to values that are,
oh no! I'm hearing music.
Are low. I think we're going to see the biggest bull market in history.
I'm with you. Listen, I apologize. We have this little time. I think your concepts are fantastic, folks. This is John Maldin. Look for his book, Just One Thing, in the fall. Hit his website. John, thanks for being with us. You've been listening to Voice America Business. We'll be right back with more profitable investing after this quick break.
The the Magnet Investment Group, our job is to maximize returns for both institutional and individual investors. We have a team of licensed investment professionals who are available to handle all facets of financial planning, insurance, and investing for individual retail accounts. Go online now at magnetinvesting.com and see what we can do to help your financial success. Call right now and never make a bad investment again. 1-973-895-4444. The Magnet Investment Group, a disciplined way to pick winning stocks.
Think you've got a grip on the profit potential your property has? Tune in to VoiceAmerica.com Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time for Commercial Real Estate 101 with Dennis Manning. Dennis will teach you the ins and outs of the massive world of real estate. You will learn the rewards and pitfalls of why to invest in commercial real estate. You'll also hear from experts in property management, lending, title work, tax-deferred exchanges, legal issues, and many entrepreneurial investors. The best part? You'll learn to generate a regular income that'll lead to enticing capital gains. So don't miss one moment of Commercial Real Estate 101 with Dennis Manning, Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, right here on VoiceAmerica.com.
What stock should I buy?
When is it time to sell?
Where do I turn for honest advice on my portfolio?
For the answers to these questions, tune in to Trading in Today's Markets with Oliver Alvarez and Greg Capra every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time. On the show, Oliver, Greg, and their guests will discuss the daily going-ons of Wall Street, as well as give you tips on how to identify the hottest sectors and trends in the market. Improve your portfolio. Listen to Trading in Today's Markets with Oliver Alvarez and Greg Capra, broadcast live on Business America Radio every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time.
You hear business show after business show all geared towards improving a company's bottom line. But what about your bottom line? How come no one ever talks about that? Finally, a show dedicated to the worker, The Crow Show with Paul McLaughlin, The Work Wonk. Heard every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, The Crow Show is aimed specifically at the worker and their environment. From work skills and technology to dealing with bosses and coworkers, The Crow Show will give you insight on how to survive and prosper in today's workplace. The Crow Show with Paul McLaughlin, The Work Wonk. Heard every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on The Bottom Line of Business Talk, BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
The Bottom Line in Business Talk. Voice America Business.
Welcome back to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. If you would like to be a caller on the show, dial toll-free at 1-888-766-6828. Now please welcome back the host of Profitable Investing. Here's Jordan Kimmel.
And welcome back, everybody, to another segment of Profitable Investing. And it's my absolute pleasure to bring on Richard Smitten. Richard's the author of The Amazing Life of Jesse Livermore and also How to Trade in Stocks. And we're going to go over some of Jesse Livermore's career methodology and also what else Richard has been up to. Richard, thanks for being on the show.
My pleasure, Jordan.
All righty.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, well, let me just first say before we get started, our listeners have heard me talk extensively several times about Jesse Livermore. I think I've read everything I could find written and about him. So tell us, tell me how you actually first got interested in Jesse Livermore.
Well, I got interested in him when I was 13 years old. My father, who was a trader, he introduced me to Livermore's book,
okay,
How to Trade in Stocks. Mm-hmm. And then I also read Reminiscences of a Stock Operator, which is probably the best-selling book of all time on the market, which has Livermore as the protagonist in the book, even though they call him Larry Livingston in the book. It's
right,
really
right.
Jesse Livermore. Yeah.
What a great book.
So I just was fascinated by him.
Mm-hmm.
And then I write other books. I've written a number of novels and things like that, and I was in between books, and my father said, why don't you write a book on Livermore, because there have been books written on him, but no one ever explained how he did it. There's lots of books on him about what he did, but
mm-hmm.
you know, how did he do it?
Mm-hmm.
So I called Traders Press, who published both Livermore's own book and also Reminiscences of a Stock Operator, and I got together with them, and I wrote the book, and I had a lot of research to do and so forth. There was only two living heirs when I started the book in 1990. One was Patricia Livermore, who was married to Jesse Livermore Jr.
Okay.
And the other was Paul Livermore, a fascinating character who was the son of Jesse Livermore.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really Paul was very reclusive and had never spoken to anyone. He there was a on PBS did a big documentary on the crash of 29, and Livermore played a big part in that. So they tried to get him. Many people tried to get him to talk, but he'd never talk. And I was lucky enough to get him to talk to me just before he died. And he was the key to learning about Livermore as a person. It was very, very interesting for me.
Right. Well, let me bring up the investment side. You know, one of the reasons, you know, I'm so interested in what he did and how he did it was, you know, I personally believe his principles, his concepts, his ideas, way of trading have stood the test of time, and they're probably just as pertinent as they are back when he was investing. Maybe you want to touch on that or how you feel about
that? Yeah, sure. Livermore was the most famous investor. He was as famous in his day as Warren Buffett and Donald Trump combined today.
Mm-hmm.
And he made four fortunes on the market, and he did really some incredible investing and trading. And his techniques were very novel, and he kept them very secret. He was a very secretive person. Like, for instance, he used almost 100 brokers so people couldn't find out what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
He wouldn't allow anyone in his offices. He had an office, a beautiful penthouse suite on the top of a building on Fifth Avenue. He was down on Wall Street, but he moved. So no, he didn't want to get any tips or give any tips.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't want anyone talking to him. So he had a bodyguard at the front door of his suite, and no one was allowed in. But his offices were palatial. There was only six people in the office, but he found he's a fascinating character. He found in England a beautiful manor house, and he fell in love with the library, so he bought the library and he deconstructed it and sent it to New York City and then reconstructed it. So it was a beautiful mahogany library. It was probably the finest suite of offices in New York City. And he had, he was very big on communications. He ran direct lines, for instance, down to the floor of the Chicago Mercantile. He had a direct line to the London Exchange. He had a direct line to New York, and a direct line to Paris.
Mm-hmm.
So he was a fellow who believed in communications, and he had, in those days, they used a ticker tape. So he had a chalkboard in his office, and he had six fellows running up and down the boardwalk there marking the stocks, and that's how he kept track of things. And he did some novel things, which I will tell you about. But his basic approach to the market was very interesting. He believed the market, Jordan, was run by emotion, that it was not run by logic.
Yep.
So he believed everything was technical. As we know today, there's lots of technical traders. And he also did things mathematically. He did not use charts, and he used mathematical algorithms, which were quite advanced and are still quite advanced. It took us years to find the codes that he used in trading. So a lot of the stuff he did was totally innovative, and it would be disputed today. For instance, he would not have any time for analysts, as an example. He believed everything was on the chart or on the tape, and that was evident to you if you looked at it. So the analysts are dealing in future time and other considerations when, in his opinion, everything is disclosed to you in front of you on the chart, if you know how to read it. You got to be sort of Dick Tracy to be able to do it, but that was his belief. And there would be a lot of controversy about the everything being emotional, but if you look at, like, P.E. ratios, an example, when a stock takes off, as we know from a couple of years ago, the P.E. ratios go crazy. And there's no relationship between the stock's price movement often and its performance, its financial performance. Lots of times they catch up, but the public reaction to it, in his opinion, and my also, was based on emotion. So you got to understand your own emotions, and you got to understand the emotions of at the present times about 90 million investors,
right,
in the market. So you're it's I kind of equate it to a a school of small fish that they swim around and then a predator comes or whatever and they all scatter and run crazy and so forth. So you are trying to figure out what the next move is so you can make some money on this stock, but in his appraisal at least, it's emotional.
Right, and it shows up on the tape as the sum of all supply and all demand, right?
Exactly, that's totally correct, yeah. And so if you can read that, you can have a good chance of making some money.
Right. Well, let me just bring out one subject that he was kind of innovative in that other people have latched on, and certainly a lot of, one of my heroes right now, and, William O'Neill has taken a lot from Livermore, and talking about industry groups and combining stocks. Can you share?
Yeah.
Livermore like to take a second stock, or maybe you share the story.
Okay. Livermore had some very innovative things which are in the book, and let's use one example. For example, he believed that you never looked at a single stock.
Mm-hmm.
You looked at two stocks, and you picked a group, and in that group there'll be two stocks that dominate that group. Let's say stockbrokers, for instance.
Yep.
Merrill Lynch and Morgan Stanley make up about 60% of the market cap. There's 350 brokers in that group, but those two are the dominant ones.
Yep.
And so when you go to buy a stock, you should look at what he called a sister stock. You should look
right
at two stocks at one
mm-hmm
time. And he very much believed in group movement. Now, everybody knows, not everybody, but most people know that stocks move as a group, but no one does anything about it. They know about it, but they don't do anything. Livermore did what he called top-down trading. And what he did is he, first of all, he basically wanted everything in his favor before he'd make a trade. So he looked at the overall market. Then he looked at the group. Then he looked at a stock. Then he looked at a sister stock. And all of those four elements had to be going in one direction. And with Livermore, a very important thing, Jordan, that Livermore, and all his thinking was brilliant, but it was simple. There's nothing
mm-hmm
complicated in Livermore's thinking. He said the stock market goes up a third of the time, sideways a third of the time, and down a third of the time. So if you're long all the time, you're out of the play two-thirds of the time.
Right.
The stock, and so he was called the great bear of Wall Street and stuff like that, but to him it did not matter whether a stock was going up or down, whether it was in the bull or bear position. He traded the stock according to the trend that it was in at the time. So he would look at a stock, and often when he got through with the upside, he'd jump on the other side of the stock and short it and take it down. Now, less than 2% of investors play the short side, because
mm-hmm
the short side, as we both know, can be quite dangerous. But he said, why, and especially mutual funds, like they're locked in because of their charters. They always have to be long.
Right.
And also, many times they can't be in cash, a lot more than 5% in cash.
Right.
So when you get a terrible bear market, they're trapped. They're on the wrong side of the market, and they're 95% invested. They can't get out. So I hear that music churn.
Yeah, they're playing a little music for us. But what I'm going to ask you to do, Richard, if you don't mind, we have another segment or some more time we could spend.
Yeah, I'd love to.
I'd love you to spend some more time with me. So if you would, let me just go to a break and tell the folks you're listening to Voice America Business. We're going to be back with more profitable investing and Richard Smitten right after these quick breaks.
At the Magnet Investment Group, our job is to maximize returns for both institutional and individual investors. We have a team of licensed investment professionals who are available to handle all facets of financial planning, insurance, and investing for individual retail accounts. Go online now at magnetinvesting.com and see what we can do to help your financial success. Call right now and never make a bad investment again. 1-973-895-4444. The Magnet Investment Group, a disciplined way to pick winning stocks.
Win with effective marketing. Win with proper positioning and branding.
Win with Dick McDonald on his show Win-Win Marketing for Buyers and Sellers every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time. On the show, we will discuss the challenges and common mistakes made in today's industry while providing you insight on what you can do to avoid these pitfalls. Get ahead with effective marketing in today's world. Listen to Win-Win Marketing for Sellers and Buyers with Dick McDonald, heard every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, here on The Bottom Line of Business, BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Are your accounts stuck in bumper-to-bumper traffic? Are your finances flowing at 2 miles an hour? It's time to crank your cash into high gear by tuning in to Making Sense of Financial Nonsense with Bullseye Bruce Horowitz. Every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time, Bullseye Bruce will give you no-nonsense, common-sense financial advice that anyone can understand, as well as bring you clarity on some of the most complex and confusing financial issues today. So get out of that traffic jam and listen to Making Sense of Financial Nonsense every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time, right here on The Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
You hear business show after business show all geared towards improving a company's bottom line. But what about your bottom line? How come no one ever talks about that? Finally, a show dedicated to the worker. The Crow Show with Paul McLaughlin, the Work Wonk. Heard every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, the Crow Show is aimed specifically at the worker and their environment. From work skills and technology to dealing with bosses and coworkers, the Crow Show will give you insight on how to survive and prosper in today's workplace. The Crow Show with Paul McLaughlin, the Work Wonk. Heard every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line of Business Talk, BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business, this is Voice America Business.
You're logged on to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. If you would like to call in with a question or comment for Jordan or his guests, dial toll-free at 1-888-766-6828. Once again, that number is 1-888-766-6828. Let's get back to another segment of Profitable Investing. Here's Jordan Kimmel.
Welcome back, everybody, to Profitable Investing with me, your host, Jordan Kimmel, and we have Richard Smitten on the phone. And Richard is a best-selling author and really is deeply involved in the history and the doings of Jesse Livermore. I want to, you know, tell you, you've already touched on a couple of what I think are the most important points. I'll let you elaborate on the idea that Livermore talked about not only the fact that markets go up and down, but that no human being could actually trade the market constantly. And after big runs that he would make, I know he'd like to jump on the train down to Florida and literally pull the plug, clear his mind. Can you talk about that for a minute?
Yeah, he actually took an entire floor at the Breakers Hotel in Palm Beach, and he had a 300-foot yacht. His yacht was second in size to J.P. Morgan's yacht. And he liked to fish and stuff like that. So he believed that you just kind of ran out of, no one could beat the market all the time, and that it was in your best interest to take breaks from the market to rejuvenate your kind of spirit and get back into. And the one short story I'll tell you, Jordan, which is the beginning of one of the books on Livermore. There was a legend. I never could prove this, but I believe it probably happened because he was such an eccentric character. Every New Year's, he went into the Chase Manhattan. That's where he kept his money.
Oh, I love this story, yeah.
The Chase Manhattan vault. And he went in on Friday night in the time vault, and he sold all his positions out, and he put them all into cash, and he had the cash actually put into the vault. And we're talking about, you know, upwards of $100 million, and that would be billions in today's money. And he would go into the vault, and he'd spend the weekend in there with his money. And he also reviewed all, he kept very careful journals on all his trades. So while he was in there, he would review all his trades and try to learn from them, like learn his mistakes and not repeat them. And so he'd sit in there with, you know, he'd be, food and so forth would be provided. And then on Monday, when he walked out, he would fill his pockets with a lot of money and just go have a huge amount of fun for a week or two spending the money, because he had lost perspective that of the money, because paper passed over his desk so often and he was signing chits and checks and so forth, that the money really lost its value. So he went out and spent it and saw exactly what what he was working for. He never, by the way, he, in my opinion, was not, the money was not why he did it. The money was the reward for being an excellent trader. He was challenged by winning.
Right.
And he was also a terrific bridge player and a backgammon player. It's funny, Ace Greenberg endorsed my book, and I went to visit him. And he's got the same, Ace Greenberg of Bear Stearns.
Sure.
He's the chairman of Bear Stearns.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got the same exact, he plays high stakes bridge and backgammon, and he's got the same kind of mentality. And it's excellence. They're after excellence. And
right.
The mathematical part of the whole equation fascinates them.
Right. Well, let me tell you that, yeah. You know, again, this is why, you know, you're on. I'm asking you to be on. I tried in many ways to emulate Livermore, maybe minus a couple of his eccentricities. I know that he
yes.
liked... maybe
yeah.
had probably had a little too many wives for my own taking.
Mistresses, too.
Right. But let me also touch upon something else which not a lot of people talk about. I want your reaction. You know, he was known as being a superb trader, but in his own books he talks about some of his trades, just a couple of his trades, where he sat tight and was right. And he just sat back and really let the profits accumulate. I want to talk about that for a minute because everyone knows him as the exceptional trader. But his comment about sitting tight when you know you're right, can you get into that for a minute?
Yeah, it's a terrific point, Jordan. Here's his philosophy. His philosophy was you should have a reason, a very specific reason to buy a stock. And you should have a specific reason to sell a stock.
Mm-hmm.
And making money on a stock was not a reason to sell the stock, in his opinion.
Mm-hmm.
So unless he had a reason to sell the stock, he would hold on to the stock. And often those stocks made him the most money because
right.
he just waited. But he kept his Nikes on, you know. He was very quick on his feet.
Right, right. He was ready to go.
He was ready to go at a moment's notice, but he needed a reason.
Right. See, that's a great point. See, what I want to talk about, and just to stick with it, I know during the break we talked about Darvish for a moment, and I want to let you talk about some of your other writings. I know you have a new book coming out. But see, in our world right now, everyone is so fleet to catch the small profits that it's the exceptional investment, the exceptional well-thought-out idea. Frankly, that's worked for me over time. And yet, all the buys and trades and sells we know were profitable, but it's the exceptional trades where we've stuck with that make the exceptional money. If you
yes.
could, you told me you have another book coming out on Livermore. Why don't you tell us about that, if you will, for a minute?
Yeah, there's three books on Livermore in total that I've written. The third book came out in November, published by Wiley. It's called Trade Like Jesse Livermore. It's more technical than the other two, and it just explains in more detail what he did. And I've got the paperback of Livermore's own book. McGraw-Hill is publishing that in the next couple of months. We also, Jordan, have a software system
mm-hmm.
that we're just finishing now that emulates the way Livermore traded. It's taken us 5 years to develop it, but it's absolutely fabulous. And on your point with regard to holding stuff, Livermore's last big challenge before he died, he didn't finish it, but he started it, was the element of time.
Mm-hmm.
See, Livermore did not believe time is money at all in the stock market. He believed money's money and time is time. In
Fantastic.
Other words,
yep.
money is a commodity. And if you don't have that, you're a storekeeper without any inventory.
Mm-hmm.
So he never looked at them, and he was also totally engrossed in the dimension of time. So
yep.
when you're talking about, if Livermore was on the phone here, he would explain, at least I think he would, that in the small time frame which day traders and swing traders operate in, that's one element. But in the longer time, like longer holders of stock, that's a different time frame. So you got to get a mindset dealing with time. And often what turns out to be a swing trade or a day trade is the beginning of a trend.
Mm-hmm.
And you're in at the right time. So once again, you need the reason to sell the stock. just because you made a point or two on it is not a good enough reason. There
right.
has to be a technical reason or some valid reason to sell it. So that was his last challenge, the element of time, which is what you're talking about here.
Yup, yup. It's very important to me, you know, and the fact is what I've learned over time and the investors we've talked about offline, the Darvis and the like, despite the fact they were known for being exceptional traders, a lot of their net worth actually came from a few, just a couple of their best trades.
That's correct. And Bill O'Neill also, Bill O'Neill, by the way, I totally
yep.
think he's terrific.
Me too.
And he is a devotee of Livermore. About 80% of his canned slim stuff comes directly from Livermore. For instance, the 10% rule, that is if a stock drops, he uses 8%, but if a stock drops 8 to 10% after you buy it, you must sell it according
mm-hmm.
to this rule. It's a correct rule in my opinion. So money management is another key element in the whole system.
Right.
And Livermore divided the entire process into timing, which is what we're talking about here, and then money management, and the third thing was emotional control, and in their opinion,
right,
the most important
right.
thing.
Now, I think, frankly, Bill O'Neill's done a great job in taking Livermore, updating it, keeping his ideas current. What I want to share with you in our last couple minutes here is at the end of your book, where you got into the mathematical part of Livermore, and he shares actual some of his math.
Yes.
You know, I'm a mathematician by nature, and I sat down with the book, and you said it took you 5 years to put this into a software program.
Yes.
Well, I tried to actually, and then you know what happens? I have kids, I run a business, and I ran out of time.
Yeah.
So what you've done with your software, frankly, I can't wait to get my hands on it.
I'll make sure you get a copy. And
right.
by the way, I did this with several people. Like, it took a lot of manpower.
Right, right. But I think I'm frankly really excited about the next one. Is there, in the last couple of minutes we have, do you want to share either a phone number or a website or any contact information or, in fact, any of the other books that I don't know about? Maybe you want to take a minute and share them, too.
Yeah. There's jesselivermore.com is the website.
Okay.
And we're going to be putting up on that website an example of the software and also how to use it. You know, we're going to have a 30-day trial and so forth. So jesselivermore.com is the place to go.
All right. Well, listen, do me a favor, Richard. Sign me up as number one. I'm
okay.
all in. And I want to tell you, it's next to having Livermore on the show himself, I really appreciate you spending the time to come on.
I'm very happy to do it, Jordan. And
thank you.
I've really enjoyed this interview.
Oh, thank you again. Folks, you've listened to another segment of Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel, and I hope everyone has a huge profitable week ahead. Enjoy the bull market we're in. We will be right back next month, next week, same time. Look forward to it. Have a profitable week ahead.
Voice America Business would like to thank you for logging on to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Tune in each and every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time for another exciting hour of profitable investing, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
Did you realize that most states in our country